This is Radio MD COVID-19 Weekly, your source for COVID-19 news from the front lines of healthcare. I'm Caitlin White. We hope you're enjoying your week thus far, and we're happy to be with you. Later in this episode, hear about the latest in COVID vaccines and some mask accessories that might make you a bit more comfortable. First, our news updates. The COVID-19 pandemic has spread so rapidly since the first U.S. case was reported January 20th that it's now the third leading cause of death in the country. That's now ahead of accidents, injuries, lung disease, diabetes, Alzheimer's, and many other causes. The CDC says heart disease and cancer are the first and second leading causes of death. With the end of mask wearing not being anywhere in sight, entrepreneurs are finding innovative ways to make them at least a bit more comfortable. By holding the fabric just a few millimeters away from the nose and mouth, the new HeartForm mask accessory facilitates breathing, keeping materials away from your face, and makes it a bit easier to talk. Paul Dobbins tells us more about what he and his partner Maggie Dobbins created.
HeartForm is a dome-shaped shield that sits below your nose between your face and your face mask to create an air pocket. It stops the mask material from being sucked into your mouth and nose, helping you to breathe easier. It helps to alleviate that feeling of suffocating or can't breathe, being very uncomfortable anytime you're in a mask. Maggie and I were both early adopters of wearing masks because we're both in the high-risk category. Even the most simple things like running errands were becoming very uncomfortable. And our favorite hobby is hiking and walking, and that became very, very uncomfortable indeed, particularly on the hills of San Francisco. And so it seemed to me that there had to be something that we could do that would make it much more comfortable than it currently was. So I Googled looking for things like mask inserts, mask accessories, and just looked at all the results and said, there's nothing out there at the moment. So I guess if I can't buy something, I better make something. And so that's where this started from. It can fit under most masks, paper or cloth. Obviously, it needs to be a shaped mask, not a bandana, because it uses the shape of the mask to hold itself in place. It's very lightweight, so that it doesn't become a burden. It doesn't pull on the mask. In fact, you really can't tell that you've got it in after a while. You just kind of forget it's there. And it creates this big air pocket that allows you to breathe, and the fabric stops hitting you when you're inhaling. It really helps with that kind of feeling of anxiety that you get when you put it on, which is why we say breathe easier. It's not just, it stops physically the fabric from touching you, but it also lowers your anxiety so that you feel a little more comfortable wearing a mask. I'm not saying that I'm very comfortable wearing one, but it's an improvement, and that was what I was looking for. We designed it for ourselves, but the moment it was done, we realized there was just a much wider audience that it really could be offered to. And frontline workers was really who we were thinking of. Back when they were still only called essential workers, and mainly, people in the healthcare industry. We designed it so that anybody could wear it. That was really our whole focus. It is dome-shaped, so it rests on your cheeks and around your face and down to your chin, and then it creates this airspace. So that you don't touch it, doesn't touch your lips, doesn't touch your nose. It just sits there between your nose and your upper lip. In all seriousness, I was thinking about when I couldn't find anything on the internet, I said, what is it I'm looking for? And I could visualize this kind of dome to protect the mouth. And I got up the next day and I took some jewelry wire and I started shaping it and twisting it, and until I got something that I thought was fairly decent from a size and shape. And funnily enough, it turned into kind of like heart shaped. And Maggie said, oh, let's call it heart form. So that's how the name actually got created. And then I strengthened this little wire model into a much stronger model, and then created a couple of versions of it. And Maggie and I became the first guinea pigs and wore it for, I don't know, about a week or so before handing off versions to family and friends. And then once that had occurred, then we started thinking about how it's going to move forward, because this is clearly not a sustainable model at that point. The easiest place for people to go is to our website, which is www.heartformsf.com. And there's instructional videos and a buy now button. Some of our proceeds we give to World Central Kitchen, which is a charity that is providing about 150,000 meals across America every single day. So Maggie is a volunteer at our local food bank, and we said we need to support food banks in America.
Convalescent plasma has now been deemed a treatment for COVID-19. The FDA says more than 70,000 patients had been treated with convalescent plasma, which is made using the blood of people who have recovered from coronavirus infections. While the Trump administration made the announcement earlier this week, many medical experts say more data is needed to understand just how effective the treatment really is. Neck gaiters have now been deemed effective once again in combating coronavirus. The tube of fabric worn around your neck and used now as face coverings are often used by hikers. A few weeks ago, a controversial article in the Washington Post said they were useless in terms of stopping the spread of droplets. But if you're like me and had been using one of these to head out to stores, you can feel safe once again. The scientists behind the original article say their findings were misconstrued. After the publishing, another team of researchers saw the post and ran some tests at Virginia Tech, and they concluded that masks or coverings that have at least two layers of fabric and fit snugly on the face offer the most protection, including neck gaiters. Everyone is, of course, hoping for a COVID-19 vaccine to come around as soon as possible, but just how soon is too soon? Russia says they have a vaccine, and other places say they will have one by the end of the year. I talked to Dr. Jeremy Levin about the latest in COVID vaccines. He is a scientist and the chairman of the Global Biotechnology Innovation Organization. Dr. Levin, tell me about this Russia vaccine we've been hearing about. I know it's a weird place to start, but I think that's the one that's kind of on the tops of everyone's minds. I mean, is it really possible that they have a safe one made already?
Caitlin, I think it's extraordinarily unlikely. Mm. The history of discovery of new medicines in Russia is very mixed. Mm. And so I think any claims, any assertions that they have a vaccine should be treated with great skepticism.
Now, you believe that a vaccine will be ready in the U.S. by the end of this year, with distribution happening hopefully in the spring of 2021. So tell us about that timeline you came up with. I mean, what really goes into creating a new vaccine, especially one that is, you know, more urgent as this one is?
So the normal process for a vaccine is that it will take anywhere as long as between 6 to 10 years. Mm. In this instance, the industry has galvanized and is focused on 6 different types of vaccine technologies. Mm-hmm. That's very unusual. Now, each of these 6 has its pros and its cons. Only 3 of them have in the past ever been used to generate a new vaccine. Mm-hmm. So we know that at least 3 of them are tried and tested. Now, by speeding up the process, there are significant considerations. However, we'll come to those in a moment. Those considerations are terribly, terribly important. Six different technologies, six different types of vaccine, and three of them who've never delivered anything in the past. But all of them have the potential to develop something interesting and very useful. So I came, after looking at all of the different trials that are ongoing, it is clear that at least one of these will show some form of response, and probably more. These early responses that we've seen are encouraging across several different types of technology. They haven't yet told us what kind of immunity they will generate, mm-hmm. nor have they told us which, and by that I mean immunity comes in different kinds. It can be short-term, it can be long-term. Nor have they told us which population it would be best served to. Should it go to the young people or should it go to old people? And what that means is that what's critical now are the clinical trials that are ongoing, and there are several of these which are very well constructed, but compressed in time. So what we will know at the end of the year, by the end of the year, is which of these six appears to have an effect, and it's likely that one or more will do because they've been well constructed, the trials. The real concern, Caitlin, is that these trials need to be 100% transparent, and the FDA needs to be able to spend the time for us to really appreciate what each one of these different types of technologies have generated. A vaccine for the old, a vaccine for the young, one that lasts short time or one that lasts a long time. And then, more importantly, absolutely crucially, what are the side effects? Now that, unfortunately, mm-hmm. we won't know for some time, because once you've given the vaccine, normally the reason it takes 10 years is that you have the FDA, which carefully watches after a vaccine is released to see, are there any side effects? Are there things that could actually impact the utility of that vaccine? Here, because we're speeding along, that process of surveillance by the FDA is critical. And it's no other body that can do it. No other body that can do it. It is the FDA. So, Caitlin, I am encouraged. I believe we'll have based on the clinical trials, I believe we'll have a vaccine. But I caution everybody to say we don't yet know what kind of a vaccine that will be exactly, and or have we set up both the surveillance subsequently to ensure that it's a safe and effective vaccine, and equally, can we manufacture enough of it to help everybody? So long answer, sorry about that.
Don't apologize.
I think that we get a lot of news and a lot of noise about this. And at the end of the day, we need to all understand that this is a process which has been curtailed from 10 years to one mm-hmm. year. But we cannot compromise on scientific and medical data analysis by mm-hmm. the FDA and companies, and we cannot compromise on surveying what is the outcome of the vaccine subsequently.
So you mentioned all these different factors that go into making a vaccine, and of course one that works for different age groups and other factors. I guess my next question is, you know, hypothetically, we have the vaccine or something, a first run that we're giving out to people. I mean, how do we get the vaccine to work in terms of convincing people to actually get the vaccine? I mean, that is what will, you know, stop us from getting the virus. How do you get people to take a vaccine that's kind of on this quick turnaround and one that we kind of have all this differing knowledge about as lay people?
Caitlin, you put your finger on the critical aspect. I think the most important aspect of what you've said is that everybody must trust the source of information. We need to educate. Yeah. We need to educate people of what about what we're doing and what is being done. And that education is as important as delivering the vaccine, because there are many people who are suspicious of vaccines. It's very unfortunate, Caitlin, that the Lancet magazine published way back 30 years ago a fallacious paper which called into question vaccines and linked it falsely with autism, and then took 15 years to retract it. But nevertheless, in those 15 years, many well-meaning people have become suspicious of vaccines for the wrong reason. They've been given fake news. In fact, they were given false news, and they are basing their decisions on this. So now, what's crucial as we rush into the COVID-19 vaccine era, that we have doctors and scientists who give us the accurate facts of exactly what these vaccines do, and that we invest in an education program across the nation. Because if we don't do that, those who are anxious and suspicious won't be able to trust what they're getting. And I understand that. I think you and I both understand that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's crucial, crucial that we embark on a non-political, non-assertion-based, when I say assertion, telling people what it does, but rather laying out the facts so that doctors, physicians, nurses, and the individual in the street understand exactly what this vaccine does. Exactly what it does.
Mm-hmm. I guess wrapping up here, you know, coming back to even the Russia vaccine, or just like what you were talking about with this education initiative, I mean, in this time, so much is unknown about COVID-19. So there is, you know, information coming out at a rapid pace, some of it credible, some of it not. I mean, when it comes to vaccines, how can people just make sure they're getting the right information, especially when, you know, we're all scrambling to just have some hope and hear some good things?
You're right. At the end of the day, it is incumbent on the companies and the FDA to ensure that you have a full, transparent process that provides for really rigorous understanding of the rigorous process that both have gone through. And when the companies announce their data, they need to have assured the world that they have done this in a fashion which can stand the acid test of what's called peer review, review by those who are really knowledgeable in the area and understand what the company has done. And what we can't have is companies rushing to announcements, which I don't believe that they will do, because they understand their credibility will be undermined, simply to say they're first. And that means that in addition to them, we must demand, all of us, that the FDA take the time, the thought, the kind of things they do so well to evaluate the vaccine results from those companies. And if they're able to do that, and then they can announce that they have credibly reviewed it to the satisfaction of top physicians, top scientists, and that it is transparent to the nation, I believe we have the mechanisms and the ability to assure people that it's there. But what we can't do is listen to what's in the press. We need to have public statement by the companies, peer review of the data, and rigorous process at the FDA. And I have to say one last thing, Caitlin.
Absolutely.
We cannot allow the electoral process to interfere. Neither party should be permitted to use this as a way of saying they did or they didn't do something. We're all at risk here. Every single American is at risk of COVID.
Mm.
We are one. This is not about a party. This is about science and medicine. And the only way to get the result that us and our children and our responsibilities to our children demand this. The only way that we can be satisfied that we've got this data is that there is politics is taken right out of it.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Levin, thank you so much for this just informative and grounded interview. Is there anything else that you want to add in that we didn't touch on already?
Caitlin, I want to just simply say that it's unbelievable how the biotech industry, without being asked, and the biopharmaceutical industry, without being asked, in January of this year, stepped forward. And yes, I did write about this, but and that's it. It's a book. If you're interested, do go read it. But the fact is, the stories are real. This is the biotechnology industry. There are 1,000 companies. They are a strategic asset to the United States, and it's those individuals who are in those companies who are standing in the front line, defending against COVID-19. And I have to say, I came to this country in 1986, and I've never been more proud of working in the industry, never been more proud of my colleagues and the way that they've stepped forward. It's truly wonderful. And if we are successful and they do their job and are transparent, we're going to fight this and we're going to defeat it.
Well, this has been another episode of Radio MD's COVID-19 Weekly. Contact us with questions or just give us some feedback at COVID-19@radiomd.com. I'm, of course, Caitlin White. Stay safe and 6 feet apart.